Thank you for joining the latest edition of the Teach Me How Northern Affinity podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to say I'm joined by Lucy today. So thanks for joining us, Lucy.
Thank you very much. Very welcome. Lovely to be here.
And so for those who read the information or looking at us on YouTube right now, we're going to talk all about health and wellness today and different areas of that. Now, it's obviously such a big topic area. You know, in the half an hour or so we're on here, we're probably not going to cover every bit of it, but we're going to try and cover some of it. But before we do, Lucy, do you want to just kind of give us an introduction to you and what you're doing and who you are and all that kind of stuff, and then we'll chat about health and wellness.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thank you. Yeah, so I am Lucy Rose Metcalf, as you can see by my t-shirt, Lucy Rose Coaching. And today's actually my very first day of having my own health and wellness coaching business. In fact, it's coaching, but I've definitely got a real interest in the health and wellness. I think that probably started from the age of three when I started dancing, did that throughout my life. And just really, really passionate about health and wellness for everyone. And I think that's kind of where my focus is going now as a business, that it's not just for the rich, it is for people from every walk of life. And with, like myself, disabilities, conditions, you know, that we shouldn't be discriminated against, and that it should be, and it can be accessible for all, but I think people don't realise how we can do it very simply by taking small steps. So I want to, you know, potentially be one of those people that helps the world to realise that we can all get health and wellness for ourselves.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic objective, that's for certain, Lucy. And secondly, congratulations on the first day. That's great news. I feel honoured to be talking to you on that. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. Probably that's kind of, I guess, taken to its most basic level. What do we mean by health and wellness? What is it? Because I'm sure probably we all have slightly different interpretations of that.
Absolutely. I think as well, it's really interesting. I think terms change over time. And I remember when the word welfare was a word, you know, you might have a welfare officer at college. And we all knew that they were looking after our welfare. Then the word well-being came around. Now health and wellness is really common. So understandably, myself included, it's a little bit confusing to differentiate. The way that I see it is that well-being is in three areas. And, you know, if you imagine that you go to the doctor and they might say to you, oh, how are you doing? I think in the past, a person would just imagine that they've got to talk about their physical well-being. Oh, my back's sore, I've hurt my shoulder, I've got migraines, etc. And we just saw it as our physical well-being, when actually I think there's three elements to it. And the other elements are the mental well-being and how good or poor or average or you know, normal our mental health is, our thoughts and feelings. And they can really, you know, be up and down, of course. And then also our social well-being, you know, our connections. And I think that the three of those together really do make up our well-being and our wellness. So, yeah, I think physical, mental, social well-being allows a person to have good, positive wellness. And from my own experience, I think that the word wellness is almost the opposite to illness. So to look after our wellness can mean that we are preventing illness or sustaining our wellness to ensure that we don't become ill again, or, you know, we can work through our illness to wellness. It's a bit of a path, I think. So I hope that answers your question.
No, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned their social, because that's actually a question I was going to ask you later. So I will ask you that in a minute. Well, I was going to ask you, I guess the consequences of not looking after our health and wellness. Again, I think it may be more obvious to others or some than others, but I think the really important distinction you made there was around obviously physical health and mental health as well. And there is obviously, they are very closely related, in my opinion, as well. So I guess what could be the consequences, I guess, short term, long term, for any of us?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Mike. Yeah, I think there's a massive correlation. So when a person's physical well-being is impacted, and that might be for a number of reasons. It might be that they've become extremely busy, or they're a new mum, or they've got an injury or a condition all of a sudden to deal with. And that, for somebody, myself included, can be a real shock. And so what we normally did to, stay healthy and happy in our everyday can slide and slip. And before we know it, that can then impact our mental well-being. So we start to feel a bit lower. And then as a result of that, over time, and it can take a long time, or it can be pretty drastic depending on what's happened to our physical health, then a person can really start to isolate, to withdraw, to feel a change in their identity, to notice whether friends are there or aren't there. So I think it can have a real knock-on effect negatively, and the consequences can be really, I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but I've worked with a lot of people who have really become quite depressed and anxious as a result of a health condition that isn't being dealt with effectively. But equally, on a brighter note, as soon as that person becomes aware of, that they have got choices that they can make, they can regain control of some of their health situation and take these small steps, as I call them, and that can lead to their maintaining their health or recovery. So it can have a positive impact as well as the initial negative impact.
Absolutely. And one thing I always find fascinating is how we look at mental and physical health quite differently in terms of things like, so if I twisted my ankle today, and it was bruised and various other things, I'd put ice on it and I'd elevate it, and then once it like the swelling went, I'd start building it up, strength work and et cetera, and all that kind of stuff, rehab type stuff. And when I first maybe I start once start running again, I might just do a short run to start with, and then leave it a few days and do it and kind of build it up. Then that's how we treat physical injuries in that way. But we don't treat a mental issue like that. We wouldn't do the same. We wouldn't think about it, we wouldn't give chance for it to heal and do various things and then slowly reintroduce. And I'm sure some people do, but we, I think generally speaking, we don't. And that doesn't make any sense to me.
it doesn't make any sense to me either. I think you're spot on there from the people that I've supported. I think it's been a bit of a legacy. I think we are of a similar age group. I know I'm older than you. But our parents and their parents, mental health, social health, and well-being wasn't really discussed. I think the way to deal with things back then was very different. It was behind closed doors. It was a case of, pull your socks up, get off out to school. And I think there's a lot to be said for that sometimes. Sometimes just having a tough day and it's like, come on, just move. And I think moving sometimes is one of the key things that we can do when our mental health is down. However, I think now, thankfully, things have really started to change where people really do recognize that actually our mental health is equally as important as our physical health, and possibly even more so, because if we're not maintaining our mental health, then I think when that's one of the first things to go, everything else can decline afterwards. But I've said to so many people that I've worked with before that I know are struggling, but are maybe not too keen to talk about it. And I've said, right, when you go to the doctors, what do you go for? And it's exactly like you said, Mike. They're going for a sprained ankle or a sore back or a sore shoulder. And then I say to them, what is the difference really in going to see somebody professional for your physical well-being? What's the difference? Can you do that as well for your mental well-being? And then people do start to reach out for professional help. And just to add in there, I'm not a counsellor or a therapist. I am a coach, which is more about working forwards to find personal solutions. But I think it's a really great point. And I think that if we as individuals can start to see that our mental health and our social health is equally as important and something to be discussed, with family and friends and say, hey, do you know what? I'm not feeling great at the moment. I don't even know why, but can you just bear with, or can you support me and just know that this week's a bit tough? Then, you know, like you said, we'd do that with a sore leg, wouldn't we?
Yeah. And it's really interesting you mentioned social health a few times. So I was actually really, funnily enough, purely by coincidence, listening to our podcast this morning. It was Stephen Bartlett's latest podcast, and it was with the guy who founded Airbnb. And he talked about essentially social health was a big thing he talked about, and loneliness, and he made a really, really great point about, you know, modern day society with WhatsApp, text and social media, it is easier than ever to contact someone, a friend, family, to speak to them. It's never, ever been easier. And because it's easier, we do it less now than ever before. It's a really, really interesting point I've never really thought about, because there's always it's a bit like, well, I can do it tomorrow because I know I can do it tomorrow type of attitude. Yeah. And as a note, oh, you know, tomorrow never comes. So really interesting to know what you mean like by around social health and connections, I guess, because that's something I've heard a lot more about recently.
Yeah, quite a big, deep subject here. I really love this, actually. So number of things. There was a Harvard study done, and I believe it was the professor Robert Hal Waldinger, who found out over an 80-year study that connection and social connection and giving and living within a kind of community where you're supporting each other was actually the key to the healthiest, happiest, longest life. And I don't know if you've got Netflix, anybody, or been watching something like Live to 100. And it's a study of the blue zones in the world where people are living longest. They are living longer because they're connected to people, family, friends, community. And, you know, through the generations, so you've got babies living and in the same community and, you know, eating together with great, great grandmas type thing. So I think it's absolutely crucial. I personally believe it's the reason that we're on the earth, to connect with and support other people. I think that's our prime purpose, you know, to help one another. But yeah, absolutely crucial. I know as well from myself that, you know, if I'm not around people, I mean, I'm probably quite the extrovert, but they said, didn't they, I think in COVID, that it sounds quite shocking, but loneliness is, you know, the new killer, that a bit like sitting is the new smoking, so let's keep moving, that loneliness is one of the biggest killers, that, you know, we've just got to stay connected. And I think, interestingly, years ago, probably 10, 12, 15 maybe years ago, I was teaching English as a foreign language overseas, and mobile phones hadn't that long come out. I don't even think we were onto like Apple and Android then. We were probably still Nokia. And all the people in the room, a group of young lads, were sitting there texting. You know, it was morning English class. And I just said, right, guys, come on, what are you doing? And they said, oh, we're just texting our friends. Now, the truth was, they were all friends together in the class. So I said, you know, when you go home and you're with your friends tonight, are you going to be texting each other? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. I said, so please put your phones down and connect with each other. Live in the present. You know, what has, you know, one of the negative side effects of social media or, you know, technology done? And I think it is just really important to be present and be connected to those around us.
Absolutely. And like I said, I would, if anyone wants to listen a bit more, a good example, I said, Stephen Bartlett, I'm conscious when we're recording this, so it's on the 9th of October, he released the podcast. You know, he's someone obviously who was in a very high, surrounded by people, a very high profile, but was lonely because he'd lost connection with his friends from college, from school, from family and all that kind of stuff, but has changed that, and difference that's made to him. So I think it's a really interesting listen. I haven't quite finished it all yet, but I listened to about the first hour of it earlier today. I would admire it. I would say to anyone, have a listen if you can, because it's really good. So I want to kind of move on. You touched on it right at the start about, I guess, making health and fitness something that relates to everybody. It's for everybody, because I think there may be a perception, some people that people are more affluent can get access to whether it's eating better or better gyms and classes and everything like that, and you need X amount of money to do it. And I'd like to know your thoughts on that, because, you know, it's something that matters to everybody, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I'll probably get on my soapbox now, but hopefully not too much. You know, I think that the world around us is, you know, kind of against people recognizing that fitness, health and wellness is absolutely possible for everybody. So starting with food, you know, if you walk into most shops now, you've got what seems like cheap food on sale, you know, your crisps, your chocolate bars, all looking flashy and gorgeous, and we reach for those. But I've always said to people, you know, if you were to pick up a chocolate bar now, it's probably, let's say, 90 pence. Let's call it a pound for the sake of it. But if you were to pick up a bunch of bananas, they're probably also a pound, and you might get 5 or 7 bananas for the cost of one chocolate bar. They just, you know, maybe don't look as glamorous. And I think people think that healthy food is more expensive, but I can absolutely guarantee that in the long run, if we're cooking from scratch, freezing things, using, you know, tins of things, frozen things, it's far more inexpensive in the long run. So I think that people that don't have a huge amount of money live with the concept that, oh, if I buy crisps and chocolate for lunch, that'll fill me and it'll be healthy enough and I can live on that. And I just, you know, really ask people to really consider batch cooking and just getting real nutrition into their bodies and brains. So that's the kind of thing where one a part of the UK definitely fails us, where everything just looks all very tasty and we just reach those things on the aisle. And the other thing I think with fitness is, yes, absolutely, you know, we even have adverts. I haven't seen so many recently, but, you know, your David Lloyd gyms, and I think people have a perception that it's generally expensive for a membership, and it can be. And I'll be honest, I've got a gym membership and it is not cheap, but I personally have chosen to invest there instead of other places. You know, I don't have designer clothes necessarily, but I do like to go to the gym because that's where I've chosen to invest my time, money and effort. But what I also say to people who have supported, who, you know, have maybe a living on benefits or really struggling at the time, is that just like Joe Wicks, you know, during lockdown, that we can actually just use a tiny, like, 2 foot by 2 foot space, grab a towel or a mat, do some stretching in the morning, go for a walk around your quick block, get some vitamin D first thing. And even with health conditions, I do believe that movement is medicine. So even as long as it's not causing, you know, great discomfort and the GP hasn't said do not move, then keep moving, however small, because it is accessible to all of us. But I think for some people, we just think, oh, it's only for the rich, or it's, you know, it costs more to cook from scratch, or it costs so much to go to a gym. But we don't have to go to a gym. We can use our homes, our gardens, our allotments, or green fields across the way. It's a big one.
it is, and there's a lot of things that we could go into on this. But I think I want to touch on the walking element of it, actually, because, and again, going back to the pandemic, I'm sure most people remember, we were allowed, was it 1 hour a day to go out for air? Now, I don't know about everyone, but from what I understand, the vast majority of people were going out for a walk for roughly an hour every single day. And we, you know, and there are other things that kind of stopped in our lives, so we kind of, maybe the time was there. So it's not a fair comparison, but we were doing that and we were getting out there. And I would imagine for most people it became a habit. And even then, when the things like the guidance changed and we, you know, things started opening up, a lot of people did keep going with that. But unfortunately, I think probably most people admit, and I am in this people, it dropped off, and as soon as it stopped, it's hard to get that back. So, you know, it can be done like that. And I guess it's, I was going to ask a question, actually, it leads really nice into this, about habits and the power of habits. So that, as an example, how important are habits when we, whether it's diet or whether it's fitness, you know, I think I personally find them really important to me. What about yourself?
100% with you, Mike. Absolutely. You know, I even call them myself healthy habits, daily disciplines, atomic habits, you know, the book. Definitely recommend that one. I think it's James Clear. Yes, I think majority of things are habit-based. So just to go back to your story, it was really interesting you mentioned that, because during lockdown, my husband and I were going out for walks and we saw, you know, half the village was doing the same thing. And we live quite rurally, so we were finding the local fields, that kind of thing. And, you know, there were groups of 8, 10, 12 people out in families meeting up and going out. So we then noticed the big decline. And sometimes now we are the only two people walking for a good mile or two. And we think to ourselves, where did everybody go? Because we could still be doing it, absolutely. So I think you're absolutely right. It's habits. And I think it's two things. I think it's knowing the value of what that habit brings to you. So if somebody did it just to meet a friend, but not for health and wellness purposes, if they're now able to meet that friend because there's no lockdown, then that's, you know, okay for them. But if they were doing it for their health and wellness and kept it as a habit, it would just be brilliant, because basically, sorry, I digress here, but just to go back to that, when I had a health condition, well, I still have a health condition, but when I was diagnosed and then having to kind of work through basically brain surgery, epilepsy, brain injury, I was so unwell that I had to literally put everything onto a daily planner, you know, for a week. So it was my food, my exercise, my social life. So literally my physical, mental and social activity for the week. And I had to just stick to that. Now, that can be quite regimented to live by for the rest of your life. But I think that once those habits have stuck, which apparently can take 21 days to 90 days to 6 months, depending on the habit, then afterwards that becomes part of our identity. It becomes part of our lifestyle. But I think unless we value it and see the positive consequences and sticking to it, because it takes time for those things to, you know, to manifest into our lives fully, then yeah, it can drop off. So absolutely, I think a lot of it is habit formation.
Yeah, and I think it can lead to positive consequences as well. So for me, you know, I've always been a person since I've been about 16 who regularly goes to the gym and really and enjoy that for both physical and mental health. Actually, for me, I enjoy it as a bit of a time to switch off my brain as well. And I'm now in the mindset, today's a great example. I don't have the time to go to the gym today. It's just I've meetings and recording podcasts and everything like that, which is fine. So it's one of the few days I won't normally go. However, this morning I did pack my bag to go to the gym. It's in the car with me in case something happens. So let's say you couldn't have made this today, I would have probably been to the gym today. And that's because it's part of my life and always has been. And over the last however many years, there will be hundreds of days where I've been to the gym or gone for a run when I just didn't expect that I would be able to, just because of that habit that's formed with me that I'm almost ready to go. And it's something that, you know, I would advise to anyone who's, you know, there'll be a lot of people who are very time poor, you know, especially when you've got families and work and everything like that, is kind of always be ready if that's what you want. And it could be walking, you know, put your walking boots in your car. You might get somewhere early and then you've got an hour, go for a walk, anything like that, whatever works for you.
I totally agree. And there's a couple of things you've said there, mindset and the habits again, and, you know, having your bag packed. I think so much of it is down to mindset, whether we want to do something or not. And even to recognize that naturally we don't really want to do it, especially beforehand. It's generally during the activity and afterwards that we get the reward and the chemicals, etc. And so a lot of it is mindset. And the people that I've worked with have actually said, oh, you know, I just haven't got the mindset yet or the motivation. But it does come, you know, when we've made it a habit. And then the other thing that you said about having your bag packed and in your car is absolutely paramount, I think, because when we take the friction out of the activity, so we have the bag packed, we've got the swimming cozy in the car already, it just takes that thought process out of, oh, where is the bag? Where's the cosy? We know it's in the car, or the shoes, the walking shoes are by the front door, ready to go first thing in the morning. A bit like Steve Jobs, I think he only ever wore black clothes, that he just didn't have to think about making decisions that we could just make very simply. So yeah, I think that's a really great tip. And I tell people that all the time, take the friction out. And also habit stack, that's from Atomic Habits as well. So if you like listening to music and socializing and getting fit, get to the gym. You're going to see people. You don't have to be bedsies, but it's that social well-being. You've got the physical well-being and the mental as well, because you might have the music that boosts mood. So it's all those things coming together beautifully.
Absolutely. And the last thing relating to health and fitness I was going to ask you about is sleep. It's something I've done a lot of reading and listening and various things recently, and I don't know if this is coming out of a, you know, having a now 8 year old who didn't sleep for 5 years, now thankfully does, so trying to get that back on track. But how important is sleep?
I think sleep is crucial. In fact, I've got a course and like these journeys that I'm doing at the moment online. And my first one is nutrition and hydration. But I think maybe I should have put sleep and rest first. But it's actually third. The reason is, I think why it's so important is that we all know, don't we, that with good sleep, all of our good intentions for the next day generally, you know, come to fruition, and we can go grocery shopping, or we can go for a run or a walk, etc. Or we can have a good productive day at work, or do the gardening at the weekend, whatever it might be. But those days when we haven't valued our sleep or haven't got enough sleep for whatever reason, most of those activities that we've planned or booked in can just fall by the wayside because we're absolutely exhausted, our mood dips. But for health and wellness purposes, I think sleep is definitely pretty much number one. What I've noticed is that as a general population, we're not really informed of health, wellness, sleep, food, activity as much as we should be, and the importance that it is. The importance that it holds. I think one of the biggest things that I've told people is, according to evidence, if we can get to sleep well before 12 o'clock midnight, that's when we get the best quality sleep. And I actually wear a Garmin watch, and on my phone it tells me pretty much every night that my quality sleep has been, my deep sleep is before midnight. So the proof is in the pudding, or the proof is in the Garmin. And then after that we get the light sleep, the REM. But the other thing as well, for, you know, for people with conditions, for people who are in recovery, healing takes place during sleep. It doesn't take place so much during the daytime. So for us to be balanced with our health, wellness, mental health, etc., I think sleep is absolutely crucial. And rest, naps, you know, recovering, having a bit of a break, really, really good for the body and the brain. Yeah, and I think we just, I think the government could do a bit more to let us all know.
Absolutely. It's been a big thing for me recently, and I would advise anyone to kind of look at the things that influence sleep, you know, and we're all slightly different. There is some kind of probably commonalities between all of us, but you know, the impacts, you know, I use Whoop, you mentioned Garmin, there's just like normal apps you can get on your phone for anyone. There's all sorts of different things people can get. You know, the impact for me eating late and the impact on alcohol has on your, not necessarily the amount of sleep you get, but your sleep quality is absolutely frightening. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I've had one beer at 6 o'clock, gone to bed at 10:30, and that night my quality of sleep reduces so drastically. Now that, you know, that is certainly not to say don't have a few drinks every now and again, things like that. It's not. But it's to consider it like on a regular basis, I guess, for people. And it's a big difference to me focusing on quality of sleep as much as quantity. There's certain things we can all do, whether it's eye masks to make it darker, or various other things. Yeah. And different things will work for different people, but when you can kind of quantify have a look at the different metrics, it really can help you make informed decisions.
Definitely. And I think as well, one thing that we don't do very well is have a sleep or an evening and bedtime routine. So I always say to people I'm working with, if they're struggling with sleep, so just really briefly, you know, if you've got kids, you send them to school at the same time every day, right? And they're like, yeah. And I said, well, imagine now that you go to bed at, you know, 9 p.m. one night, and then the next day you go at 11 p.m. and then it's the weekend, so you go at 3 a.m. Oh, and then we're back to Monday, so you're going back at 10:30 p.m. Now, you know, if you were doing that to a child starting the day at different times, that child would be pretty feral, probably, you know, running around. And the thing is, the brain just wants to have a routine. It wants to have these healthy habits, these routines. And we just don't really value them when it comes to our bedtime, sleep time, or what we're doing. You know, gaming just absolutely stimulates the brain before bed. Devices apparently do as well. So I think it's crucial to, they call it, I think, sleep hygiene and sleep architecture. Just making sure that that is absolutely in place as much as our daily routines as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good place to finish, because we kind of all think that sleep is as good a place to start when we think about ourselves. And it's probably a good place for this podcast to finish. But before we do, Lucy, just if anyone wants to find out a little bit more about you, what you're doing, everything like that, where's the best places to find you?
Everywhere. Pretty much everything is Lucy Rose Coaching or lucyrosecoaching.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, my own website. And I am just starting actually this 30-day, I've called it a journey, not a challenge, of the first steps, which is nutrition and hydration. Sleep and rest is going to be one of them. Come and join the fun.
Thank you very much, Lucy. And as always with these conversations, I'll put all the details in the show notes, whether it's on the podcast or on the YouTube channel as well. So if people can't find you for whatever reason, the links will be there. Just want to say thank you, Lucy, for your time. I think it's, you know, I've done a few podcasts in this kind of area, in specific areas and things like that. I think it's so important we get this right, because there'll be a lot of people watching this or listening to this who maybe run their own businesses and things like that. And you are vital to your business. You are your business in most cases. So if you can get yourself right, you give yourself a much better chance of getting your business to where you want it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. So true. And thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Love it. Thank you.